Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for coming in this very ungodly hour. If you ever commuted from San Francisco, it's horrible. That was my, maybe once in a year. I cursed at Benoit a lot because that was a bad idea. But anyway, we're here. So we're going to talk about MUX. MUX is our multiplexing protocol that we created at Twitter, which is open source, and it's been open source for more than a year. It is heavily used in production. I'm going to talk about the features that we are currently using, and I will also talk about the features we are planning to use, but not necessarily fold out to production. But before that, let me introduce myself. My name is Burke. I am part of the Twitter SRE organization. Recently, I started a new endeavor. I work on front-end traffic management as well. This talk is very identical to the one that we had at Twitter SRE Open House, with a couple of additions in RPC tab. I will not use entire 50-something minutes. I plan to use 30 minutes. So feel free to interrupt me anytime you want. We do have time. But again, I don't want to waste your time as well. And we'll have ample amount of time at the end of the talk, so you can ask questions. Even the things that I did not necessarily cover, but all your questions about RPC at Twitter or opinions I have. Opinions are like belly buttons. Everyone has one. I will have some. All right. So today, we will talk about RPC multiplexing. So show of hands, I'm quite happy this is a technical conference, but who knows what an RPC is? Good. And I believe the hands that did not rise are either sleeping or they don't know. All right. I'll talk about what an RPC is. RPC is an acronym. It stands for Remote Procedure Call. So it is the building block of distributed systems, right? We do make calls that can be satisfied by another system. And the RPCs are not necessarily trivial. There were many tries in the past. Now, who remembers Sun RPC? TCP 1.11. Good. I'm sorry for you. At least we're in a much better shape nowadays. We do have less insane RPC protocols, and RPC is a proven pattern right now. We can comfortably use them and rely on them to build reliable distributed systems. But what is multiplexing? So who knows what multiplexing is? So who thinks they know what multiplexing is? Okay, so I'll give you the idea. It is the ability to use a shared medium to relay multiple sessions at the same time, concurrently. But again, this is a shared medium. You can imagine TDM, time division multiplexing, or you can imagine how your wireless works, frequency division multiplexing. There is a medium, you do have some identifiers or some shares of shared medium, and you run multiple sessions on this single medium. So for example, HTTP is by its nature, HTTP 1.1, by its nature, is not multiplexed, right? You can do pipelining. You make a request, it's the hyper, supposedly, comes from that name. You make a request, wait for the response, and continue. But now, there are additions, and we keep fighting this thing called speed of light, which is terrible. We need more systems like that. But before jumping into the more details of multiplexing, let's go back to basics. OSI, seven-layer model. Who knows what this is? This is an interview question. All right. So, seven models. So OSI people got into a room and said that, the current situation of networking is such a mess, man. Everybody keeps reinventing same things again and again. We have to start speaking the same language. They didn't even understand each other in their conferences. So they decided to spec something up after the existing protocols became de facto protocols. So OSI actually arrived after today's de facto internet protocols. When TCP/IP was designed, OSI 7-layer model didn't even exist. It kind of fits it. This is the very basics of this one. That's why I want to go over these seven layers and try to explain where multiplexing and what we implemented with MUX, where does it fall. So I have animations. Oh boy. So we do have the physical layer, data link layer, network layer, transport session, presentation, and application layer. Let's put some names. It doesn't, maybe with this form, it doesn't communicate much. So, more animations. All right, we're going to talk about a data center-like environment. We are using Ethernet. Looks like it's wired Ethernet. So at the physical layer, we do have IEEE 802.3, the physical layer, which specs the signaling levels and like how you do authentication, how you do negotiate speed. And these are crucial, right? Like you have to take bits from point A to point B. And this is specced by IEEE. But these guys were so hardworking, they didn't stop there. They also decided to handle data link layer. What we generally refer to as the protocol Ethernet is this layer that we do, the data link layer. Sure, Ethernet definitely specifies the hardware specifics, but 802.3 MAC layer is the data link layer. And then the things that we know much better, the IP layer, which is the network layer, like a third layer, where we do have the IP addressing. And of course, we had to run some type of TCP protocol on top of it, transport layer. But like if you look at the big picture, we are simply speaking HTTPS in here, right? So my application layer protocol is HTTP. But I said HTTPS. How come it's not the application layer protocol is not HTTPS? Because we are layering, right? The S portion of this one is handled by TLS. So as in the session layer, the fifth layer, a little bit of implementation handled by TLS. So like you can have some type of multiplexing, some type of session tracking, because it's too damn expensive to do these exchanges every single time. You do have a session identifier, so you don't keep exchanging keys at all times. But the important thing of TLS is it changes presentation. So its presentation is not clear text HTTP. It's encrypted. It's simply a presentation protocol. All right, you got our basics. Like, what's your problem? What are you talking about? What we are talking about in here is when we do RPC, at Twitter, we do use our RPC protocol of choice is Thrift. So we do serialize objects with Thrift. Thrift is also used in used for our data at rest platform. And there are other serialization options, such as Parquet. Maybe they'll talk about it. No. It's a columnar store. But it's only between Thrift and Parquet at Twitter. How about RPC? RPC has to use some serialization and also has to provide some calling semantics, right? So Thrift does that. We made this decision in 2007, I believe. At that time, Thrift was available. Again, it was available, and we went with it. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is the best RPC protocol. If you ask us, like, did you feel trolled by Facebook at that time? Maybe sometimes. But yeah, it's our protocol choice. But Thrift had a lot of shortcomings, right? Very similar to the thing that I described with HTTP. It is a hyper protocol. Although it has a framed protocol, it doesn't work as it suggests. So you make a request, wait for the answer. Okay. So this thing that I keep describing is head of line blocking. So if you think about like how we compose these distributed systems, not everything is a single shot call, like, give me the tweet. Well, you don't generally get one tweet. You do a lot of stuff. You talk to a system, you get a bunch of tweets, you can batch these things. But a single service can be serving multiple RPCs as well. You know, like you can be hitting multiple endpoints. You can easily say that, why are you not binding them? But this is another topic. So these interactions in our service-oriented architecture are not single RPC, one-shot RPC calls. We have to make like multiple RPCs to the same system. Because if it was to multiple systems, that will be an easier problem. So calls for discrete resources are actually blocking each other. We have to wait for an answer. We have to wait for an answer. So, well, okay, you can say that what's the big deal? Just open more TCP connections. Yeah, you're making like five requests at the same time. Open five TCP connections, right? What's the problem? Like, who immediately sees a problem in this proposal? Show of hands, I do. All right, good. So here's the problem. New socket connections are not free, as in resources and latency. I mean, like, free isn't here, it's a free, it's a beer. It costs us. Like, there's no free lunch. Like, if we keep creating these connections, we'll be wasting resources. No, let's not use the negative ones. We'll be spending resources on the machines. And, like, we're trying to squeeze in a lot of stuff into a single instance, right? Like, and we're working with limited resources. But another thing that kills us all the time, like, my favorite feature at Twitter is fast. Are we fast? We believe so. But if we keep incurring these latencies and if we keep paying this tax, we cannot talk about a fast system, right? Like, we have to create this connection again and again and again. Remember TCP three-way handshake? Who remembers three-way handshake? Good. You should interview for Twitter, man. Like, you, I gave you all the interview questions already, and like, we're just like 9 minutes in. So TCP three-way handshake. Will incur this cost of carrying a packet with no data at all. Like, you can say that, well, what's the big deal, man? It's in the data center. What's your latency in the data center? Sure, it's a sub-millisecond. But like, when you're trying to serve some requests end-to-end in less than 50 milliseconds in the same geographic zone, these milliseconds, these like sub-millisecond things, they keep adding up. And unlike the good old, or good bad, days of Ruby on Rails Twitter, it is a hugely distributed stack right now. The fan-out factor is huge. So if we keep incurring this thing, we'll be slower than Ruby. I mean, that's not a very high bar. So we should deal with this thing, right? And yeah, we have to deal with these optimizations. They're not even optimizations, but maybe they're common sense. Also, TCP slow stack, sure, good. Like, you have sub-millisecond latency, and we also decided to go and like buy the most expensive switches from our friends right across the street. But we still have to deal with the realities of 1980s networking. It still haunts us. Here's the TCP slow start. So in the data center, it is still a big deal. Yeah, we can patch our kernel, we can hack stuff and do interesting things. Across the data center, yeah, we can still do stuff. I mean, like, we can do some interesting things at the edges and completely break up our explicit congestion notification and like queuing mechanisms, but yeah, we can come up with hacks, right? We can rub some machine learning to it. It will be surely better. But or like from across the pop, so good. Our cross data center links are here's the money. Give us the most reliable connection. What about pops? What about pops in countries? So. This is so stupid, it's a secret, but like, we have a pop in a country which recently hosted a World Cup. I didn't say the country name. So the connection is not like connection from East Coast to West Coast. The provider is not the same provider. Well, in terms of provider, it is the same evil provider, but still, it's not the same. The connection, the latency metrics, they're not the same. So now all these problems, the small problems or the problems we already know, are exacerbated by the realities of speed of light and general human factors. So like, these things are huge for us. And still, keep in mind, everything I'm talking in here in the data center, across the data centers, and to our points of presences, we're still in Twitter autonomous system. We're not even talking about latency in at internet scale. And we're not speaking MUX at internet scale anyway. So for every TCP connection, you have a separate network queue. And the half of the liveness detection logic is living in here. So, well, what does this mean? It means if I lost the other side, I don't know if it is the line is congested or if the other side is dead. And if the other side is dead, I want to move on. Like, I do have, sure, like, there's this RPC destination there, but believe me, I have 999 more machines across this, like, 1,000 cluster. I have to move on. I have to know if it is dead or not. Like, there's no way that we can wait for these timeouts. And, like, I need to really know if the system is capable of handling the load. Is it loaded? Is it in a catatonic state? We were talking about Manuel. Is the kernel decided to defragment the transparent huge pages and, like, taking a dump? We don't know. But we need some support. And TCP does not give us this support. Oh, boy, we need to implement something. That's the worst thing. All right. A little bit more history bashing. TCP key failure. So blessed from October 1989. I was playing with Matchbox. I was 8 at that time. So TCP key failures are specified in an awesome manner, not more frequent than 1 every 2 hours. I didn't make a typo in here. It is hours. It's not minutes. It wouldn't help. It's two seconds would kill everything for us. Like, if we do have systems with 2 second latency, probably Dave or I are getting paged. It's 2 hours. It's the kernel, not the application. So kernel sends the key payloads. Your application has nothing to say about key payloads. So, well, yeah, go ahead and use the blast from the past. Use the key payloads for liveness detection. Turns out that also doesn't work. Okay, I keep talking about liveness detection for sure. But what about request cancellations? How do you cancel a request? Let's talk about HTTP today. Just like, forget about MUX. So you go to twitter.com. Somehow we failed to process your request, and you board. You hit escape or whatever in your new Linux laptops. Probably there's an open source software to hit escape. What happens? Your browser stops the request. How does it stop the request? It uses the existing TCP connection socket, closes the socket. What happens when it closes the socket? It can gracefully send and close the socket, or maybe, like, there is another application can do something. But eventually, you're closing the socket. Remember that thing that is so expensive to keep creating new versions again and again? Good. Like, you were trying to optimize this thing, but just to cancel, just to signal a cancellation, now you're closing them. That's interesting. So cost of tearing down the TCP connection is too damn high. I didn't put the too damn high guy GIF in here. All right, what about availability advertisement? Like, how do we know if something is actually available? Like, sure, like, it listens on a port. So you send the packet, see, and you get the SYNAC. Who are you talking to? Answer. You're talking to kernel. Your application can be doing anything. It can be our beloved JVM doing garbage collection right there. Like, you have to wait a couple of seconds. Or, like, I don't know, like, somebody double freed something and we're in a state. Or I couldn't come up with some snark about Go or Node.js, sorry. Something bad happened. Your application is not there, but you're still talking to kernel. It's available, sure, it opens, it accepts your call, not necessarily that accept, but responds to your call. So all these problems haunted our availability and latency in the data center. That's why we thought, like, we should come up with something. So we also wanted to, while we are at it, like, we understood that we are in this thing for, we are going to break a lot of stuff. We will reinvent a couple of things. Hopefully we will build a better wheel. And hopefully we will not reinvent a lot of stuff. But, like, while we are at it, while we are in this thing, we also wanted to separate control plane from the data plane. So when we talk about data plane, we're talking about your client talking to your server, like a service talking to another service. Everything you keep exchanging in there is defined by your interface definition language or something. It is strictly business. But of course, outside of the business, there can be other issues. Issues such as, like, the other service decides that, well, I'm really under trouble right now and I won't be able to process these things. So how do we annotate these things? We used to annotate these, we still do. We annotate these things with horrible thrift exceptions, which are like loosely handled. And thrift exceptions are not necessarily exceptions. Thrift exceptions are just return values with an exception field set to true. It actually means that you can throw multiple exceptions with thrift, which turns out to be not a good idea. I did that, don't do that. And it confuses all the code generators. I repeat, damn code generators. So it was making things already much more complex than they were supposed to be. At this time, we also decided we want to add out-of-band control messaging as well. Control messaging that I'm going to talk about, such as I'm under load, back pressure signaling, or I'm not available, I'm just warming up, because we run most of our systems with JVM, and yeah, warm up is a thing. Like, we have to load classes, we have to open connections, we have to gracefully call the first garbage collector, so like our tenured generation is not that full, and like we will not fail. Like, these things are the realities of production, and we wanted to address all these things without making the RPC portion, not the multiplexing, without making the application layer more complex. Okay, so, oh boy, back to those seven layers. I talk too much, like, tell us what you're building. So, we're building this fifth layer. I'm gonna lie and go ahead and say that what we build is a purely session, purely layer five session protocol. But at the end of the talk, I'm gonna tell why I lied. So these concerns, remember that like, I keep talking about this stuff? These concerns can all be addressed in the session layer, or as we told. So we need a session, we needed the session protocol. We're convinced and we came up with MUX. So MUX is an open source multiplexing protocol. There is not much rocket science related to it. It can multiplex any protocol you want. Let's go back to here. Stuff at Twitter looks like this, right? Like, there's no, if Ethernet working over TCP, nothing in the session layer, nothing in the presentation layer, and thrift. Or like sometimes there's thrift over TLS, so you'll see some presentation and session layers, which is trivial. But then there's nothing in the session layer. So this session layer protocol, MUX, can multiplex anything you want, anything at layer 7. You can multiplex HTTP. Is this a good idea? No, use HTTP 2. You can multiplex Memcache. Is this a good idea? Maybe. But is multiplexing thrift a good idea? Production experience showed us it is a terrific idea. Like, we had so much latency savings and significantly improved our availability, especially with the realities of complicated or like deep stacks. So with MUX, we believe we implemented everything that addresses the concerns that I talked about. As an addition, we added explicit queue management. So with MUX, we are addressing these concerns by introducing a concept of NAC, and not acknowledge. A very common problem with our RPC systems, things that mutate data, is when you send a request, like it's out from your point of view, and you get nothing. What happened? Did it mutate something? Can I retry this? I don't know. This is the most horrible thing. Like, you're not always lucky that all your calls are idempotent. That's a lie. Like if all your calls are like idempotent and you're not doing anything, I want to meet you. I mean, like, I want to work for your company. This is so good. So you mutate stuff, and it is the scariest thing ever. Sometimes you cannot retry. Like, if you're doing like especially anything that touches money, like how do you do retries? Like, how do you know that you do not break stuff? Of course, you can have much more complex things implemented at the application layer, making sure that the conflict is just, oh boy, this is not systems engineering anymore. So NAC allowed us to return, you know what, I'm not going to handle this thing, and I promise you I didn't even look at your thrift call. Like, I'm in trouble right now. Like, it might be, like, I'm about to do garbage collection. Or, like, my backends are completely down, and, like, my self-perceived success rate is so horrible, there's no way I'm going to satisfy your request. So, like, we can relay deadlines in our RPC saying that, yo, you know what? Like, I need this user within 8 milliseconds. Can you give me it in 8 milliseconds? It is trivial for us to look at our self-observed short-term profile and say that I cannot serve this in 8 milliseconds. Like, I served like last 10,000 suckers in 20 milliseconds. Maybe you should try another instance of mine. With Next, we can easily do that. But it can even be a tweet write, right? Like, you are trying to tweet something. You go ahead and write. So you have to write this tweet in like 30 milliseconds. Can you write this? No way. We can try others. With Next, this allows us. And like, we can run any protocol on top of this thing. And of course, leases. Leases are also important. Like, how do we know? Do we need to expect Next every single time? No, that would be quite inefficient as well, right? Like, we also implemented a lease mechanism at Mux. So you can ask for a lease, and we guarantee to serve you for some specified amount of time. I think the protocol communicates nanoseconds. So within that amount of time, you don't need to take a lease. So what does it give us? It gives us the ability to plan for our short-term capacity. If we know a server, an instance, can generally handle 20,000 requests in flight, we can have a trivial semaphore around this thing. And we do not give, issue leases to more. Like, while you issued leases and they are not making requests, you can always invoke the lease, not invoke, revoke the leases. So this gave us the ability to do proper back pressure signaling. The beauty in here is you can have exceptionary back pressure signaling or planned back pressure signaling. So if we are talking about an instance where we ran out of leases, it is quite obvious that we ran out of leases. So on the client side, we can easily say that, I'm going to try this 5 times. Like, outside of this whatever that the cluster size is, if I am this unlucky to say that I got denied 5 times, there is something wrong. And we will bubble up this back pressure signal to every single system that is calling us. So this way, we can start from the bottom of the stack, let's say that we cannot write to a database, to any other core service, going up to our front-end server, and we can return it to HTTP 420, was it 420, and send the header retry after. And this is implemented, if you're using Twitter on Twitter-owned and operated apps, official apps on iOS or Android, it's implemented. We can sometimes send your application, retry after 2 seconds, retry after 4 seconds, and you don't need that. We cheat you, we lie you that, you wrote your tweet, and no, we didn't. It will try, and we will fail you gracefully. So I was like, by the way, the tweet that I told you that I wrote, and now. But all these things are now available to us to implement, and this explicit queue management allowed us to do this. So there are a couple of interesting use cases in here. So Mux, in addition to these features, explicit queue management, that requires destination dispatch in there. So with Mux, although I lied, it's not entirely a session protocol because now it starts to inspect the destinations as well. Remember the four layers of the four layers that we interact in, 7 layers? With Mux, you can actually specify logical destinations of an RPC. Whoa, what do you mean? So, well, we use Zookeeper, that's no secret, to do service discovery. Let's say we do have a cluster we want to talk to. There are 100 nodes in it. You get the list of 100, and you pick one with your load balancer algorithm. That load balancer is a software load balancer implemented in Finagle, which is also our open source RPC framework. That's easy. You picked one machine, all right? Well, you already know where to talk to. Why are you still adding the name of the machine that you want to talk to? Because you have to give the control, the RPC routing control, to every other downstream that you're talking to. So that downstream can do something better for you. If it's unable to handle this thing, or if it is actually a proxy, it's not even a real downstream. It can actually serve this request while talking to a legacy system, or while talking to another data center, or while making some decisions on behalf of you. We are going to talk about this one. GC avoidance, GC in here is garbage collection. As I said, a significant portion of Twitter stack is implemented on technologies running on JVM. So it used to be Scala Java Clojure. I believe we have very little Clojure left right now, which is the open source project Storm. We don't use it anymore. But Twitter stack looks like either Java or Scala. And there will be some sprinkles of C++ some other places, especially at the front of the stack, or at the bottom of the stack. So we can avoid GC. Whoa, what? Well, we do not avoid GC. We predict there will be GC, and we make sure we do not advertise availability. This has nothing to do with service discovery. We do treat service discovery merely as a gossip. There may be a system in here that might service your request. But like, you cannot rely on Zookeeper for like sub-millisecond availability advertisements. You will kill your stack. And like that is too much to ask from the service discovery stack. I'm going to talk about this one as well. Or you can implement service-to-service authentication. That's an interesting one. Who uses Thrift in here? Good. Looks like Pinterest, you use everything we use. When I read your blog post, it really feels like Twitter blog post. Who else? Good. There's no authentication in Thrift. Like, you can roll your own, that'll be definitely ugly, but it's not part of the spec. Even HTTP has authentication, right? Thrift doesn't have. Like, we have to have RPC authentication. We cannot allow all the systems to talk to each other freely. So do we add authentication to Thrift? Maybe. Oh, by the way, we also need authenticated Memcache. So we're adding authentication to Memcache? Yeah. By the way, there's the Storm protocol, which also needs authentication because it manages... So you see where I'm going. This is crazy. You can implement authentication at the session layer and address this once and for all. So this way, in your company, there's only one way to authenticate, and there's only one way to negotiate availability and back pressures. So that's another use case. And the addition to this one, it's Oak for distributed systems. I'm going to talk about this one. Debugging distributed systems is so hard, like, so annoying. We believe that we can address this at session layer, and hopefully that will be open source soon. Let's talk about destination dispatch. So cool, I talked about service discovery and other stuff. You're doing crazy things. We already know what machine we're talking to, but like, we keep giving the logical name. Look, not the IP address, logical name. Like, I want to talk to user service. I want to talk to tweet service. These are not the services, but yeah. With destination dispatch, we know this logical name, and we know what you actually want. So we can do load balancing for you. We can do much more intelligent routing for you for less intelligent clients. Or we can completely change the destination of your cluster by observing some other features. Think about staging environments. Think about testing applications internally, going to a test cluster. Your app looks like it's running in production, but we have the hint. Let's say it's IP address. Let's say it's authentication. We can transparently send you to a staging cluster. You're not changing anything. There are no config changes. We are simply observing your current behavior and indicators, and you're running exactly the same code, exactly the same configuration flags that runs in production for staging and for testing. This is so powerful. So I'm going to give an example of load balancing for less intelligent clients. This is Ruby, less intelligent one. So Mux proxy. Unfortunately, none of these are open source yet. So unicorns, I mean, really, this is the name. Like, I didn't pick up the name. And there are also rainbows. So these unicorn workers, I believe, they do talk to Max Proxy with their protocol choice. I mean, that protocol is, I don't know, maybe it's like skinny jeans over single fixie bike, but something. Let's say it's JSON over HTTP. So they do speak to Max Proxy, and like they speak the protocol they know. And like we didn't implement Max Thrift or other stuff. It can simply be Thrift for Ruby because like code generation, right? But they do speak, but they don't know anything about like how the deep the stack is and how complex the stack is. And like it's so complex that you have to have more creative service discovery mechanisms. We do have weights now. Like we can move traffic to some portion of the cluster. We cannot implement all of these things. We want to implement these things in one single place, which is Finagle for us. So Max Proxy, written in C, simply speaks Max and carries whatever protocol that is. Let's say in this example, it's Thrift. Huh. So it is speaking Thrift. All I need to do is to make it speak Thrift and sound intelligent. Sounds like San Francisco. So Max router is implemented in Finagle. It simply receives the Max protocol. Thrift is there. We don't need to touch this protocol at all. So these less intelligent clients can talk to much more complicated portion of the stack. So these service X, Y, and Z, they might be living in a different data center. We might be in the middle of an incident. We might be in the middle of an incident that like some portion of the requests have to go to service X, some to Y, and some to Z. Will we re-implement these things for every single client? No, it's pointless. So with Mux, with destination dispatch, you have the luxury. Of course, in this example, well, like before you ask this question, we do expect these things to be not high traffic. They are like low traffic that the Mux router is not overwhelmed. But like, keep in mind, we can move a lot of traffic and like be simply limited by the network IO, the network bandwidth of this box, because like we're not inspecting much at all. We're not deserializing and reserializing Thrift. So it is easy. This is destination dispatch, and we do have more creative uses for that one. I already talked about that one. So Max routers at the edge of data center, this is, let's say, like this. Well, web host, let's assume that this can be even a data center. So they can know about the load across different data centers, across different POPs. Like if there's a global incident, we can move traffic without changing all the deciders of all the applications. Or it can be simply preference-based one. Like let's say that, well, we're going to test this thing and it will be only staging. Trivial for us. Run, protect, go ahead. So more intelligent clients are generally written in Finagle, and all this logic is already provided by Finagle. And like, more intelligent clients uses something called deciders. You can read a Pinterest blog post to understand about our decider implementation. They already implement these things. But of course, like there might be an application where we don't have time to add these features, or an application that completed its economical life. I don't know if such thing exists, we should ask managers. So we can add these features or retrofit these features with Max routers. So it's like there's nothing that stops more intelligent applications to talk to a Max router. The beauty in here is more intelligent applications have no idea if they are talking to a real host or a Max router. We can simply drop in something. I'm going to talk about that one too. So, okay, let's come to GC avoidance. Who runs stuff on JVM? I know you guys do. You? I'm sorry, I couldn't see. Okay, then not much. What else? Python? Like, non-native stack? Like, C++? Show hands. Are you sleeping? Show of hands. All right, so you guys run native stuff. Okay, so, but like, people generally know about the pains of garbage collection, right? You have to go for sleep. Like, we're running concurrent mark and sweep, but the young gen collection is still stop the world. And, like, that stopped the world of 200 milliseconds is definitely SLA affecting. Instead of sitting down and rewriting everything in another language, so we decided to find a way to go around this thing. We can easily predict Young Junk collection. I mean, it's trivial, right? You do have some amount of Young generation, and when it fails, well, you're going to stop, and hopefully all of it is garbage, and it will take very little amount of time to do the garbage collection and move on. But sometimes things will suck because like your downstreams are slow, and you'll have a lot of tenured objects, live objects. You need to copy them. You copy them, copying takes time, you're pausing, you're out of your SLA, horrible. So, but it is trivial to detect this thing. So Finagle, this thing that I'm talking about is also open source. So Finagle can easily predict this thing by simply observing your current usage and last permgen collections and create a simple profile of like obviously how much you tenure and like how much does it take to go into a GC pose. And now, just because we are speaking MUX, we can gracefully start draining our existing clients. And all of these things happens in the matter of milliseconds. We can say that, I'm about to go to a Young GC, so I'm giving you a lease of only 10 milliseconds, because like, let's say like we start predicting this thing like half a second ago. So I have like 500 milliseconds to tell everyone to go somewhere else. I'm removing all their leases. Moreover, if someone doesn't have a lease and when they come and issue a request to me, I'm sending a NAC. So this way, the load balancer of Finagle disqualifies me for some amount of time. Maybe it will not check like 4 seconds. Like there are hundreds of other instances that look like me, right? Now, when we are drained, we can easily go to garbage collection. And we do control that strictly. We do not let it garbage collect itself or keep admitting more requests. We simply force garbage collection. When we are ready, we expect for the clients to come back. So you'll see that your requests go up and like go down and then start building up again. But next time the clients come, I can already do allocations. So it really manages our latency well.
So when a client tries to connect you, when you're actually in a GC, when you're in a GC phase and a client tries to connect you, you will not respond back very quickly, right? Because you're garbage.
I won't be even able to respond. Yes. When a client... So the question was, when you're in GC and the client tries to connect to you, what happens? Can you send NAC? No, because the code that executes sending the NAC, that code is executed again in JVM. You cannot do that. So when someone tries to connect, that host tries to connect to me, it will time out. The beauty in here is we do strictly control this in our software load balancers, which is like part of Finagle. It's part of the RRPC. So when you're talking to this cluster, you almost always have a good view of the entire cluster. A significant portion of your client fleet will already know that you're in GC. But of course, there are cases when like if you're a huge cluster, let's say 10,000 instances, and obviously we do have a different load balancer for this thing, an aperture load balancer. It doesn't connect to every machine, and you can be the unlucky RPC request to hit this machine, and you'll time out. But of course, the beauty in here is we do have much more strict connect timeout and responses from MUX. So instead of like having more lenient timeouts compared to like Thrift stacks, we can squeeze our timeouts, like first response timeouts, to a degree that, well, like, are you alive? Like, are you at least able to give me something from MUX? You look like dead. Like, now we are talking about millisecond accurate, millisecond precision resolution timeouts. Yeah.
But connecting is not enough. You need to get a lease also, right?
No. You can, you know, leases are optional. Oh, that's a good question. Sorry, it's like if it sounded like that. Leases are optional. Not every client takes a lease. Like, there are many use cases where leases make sense and you can ask for a lease, but leases are entirely optional. So you don't need to take a lease. Now, like, if you are this sensitive to latency, immediate latency, the right way is to take a lease. RPC authentication, I kind of talked about this one. So here's the thing, like lessons learned from HTTP. Authenticating every single request is expensive. Who knows how HTTP basic authentication works? So it sends your username and password with every single request. Blast from 80s again? It was okay at that time. It's quite surprising it's still okay today. But so we can't do that. We can't do that. Like we do have like some bottom of the stack applications that like process millions of RPCs per second. I mean, like this is such a waste. We can't do that. So we want to make this thing authenticating only your session, so it is not like that disruptive. So we don't need to change things. So lessons from HTTP: it is expensive. HTTP basic digest. It's disruptive. Like we could modify layer 7 protocol, adding authentication to Thrift, worst idea ever, or run IPsec, good luck with your network, guys. Or like implement it in the session layer with your own X509 or Kerberos and other stuff. Yeah, that I cannot make that comparison in here, that will be PG-13. So, bad ideas, like running your X509, yeah, good. So, we decided to use something else that may or may not be in this slide. And RPC authentication is immediately solved for us. Like we can authenticate Thrift, we can authenticate Memcache, we can authenticate anything that you imagine. It's not fully in production. There are only a couple of systems that are using it, or some other systems are rolling their own. But we will converge to this one. All right, and the next slide. So remember that we talked about awk for your distributed systems. Debugging distributed systems is really hard. At Twitter, before launching something to production, we do run a meeting called Production Readiness Review. It's managed by the SRE team and the TCC. TCC is Twitter Command Center. They watch the operations all day. Like they're available multiple places on Earth, so like they follow the sun and other stuff. So, but these reviews are tough. We expect people to be production ready, and like production is real life. It is wild. A lot of things happen at production. Things such as like saturation happens, such as your downstreams are failing, your downstreams are slow, your downstreams are throwing exceptions. People never test these things when they are writing the code. They work with their RDM mocks or in a staging environment which is not loaded at all. Like nothing fails in their staging. It's the perfect world. We launch something, 0 day, bam. You don't see the veil anymore, but like you see the like, broken robot. This is horrible. We cannot tolerate this thing anymore. Right? In the past, we asked people to implement these things, such as like simulating these things. Hey, like you can induce latency by simply adding this filter because finagle filters are bidirectional, you can simply add this thing. Yeah, do that. Oh, how about errors? Okay, you can add another filter for adding errors. I mean, this is a lot of work, right? So in a Hack Week project, we came up with, this is still not open since, hopefully we will open source it again in the Finagle, RPC tab. It is awk for distributed systems. Remember the MUX router back there? You don't know that like you're talking to your end system or some thing else that speaks MUX. So this is eventually a MUX router where you can inject failure by simply observing the destination saying, oh, Twitter user service, pretty cool. Like that thing is sometimes not reliable. Okay, here's the thing. Like I'm going to add a failure every 5 requests. Oh, that's really bad. Or you can simulate latency. What happens if this user service is so slow and your object lifecycle increases and you go into GC spiral? Normally, we ask these questions in PRRs. Like you either get, oh, yeah, it shouldn't happen, or blank stares, or like, yeah, we tested this thing. Like, we tested this thing is the most confident answer that you can give. But to give confident answers, you do not need to rewrite a framework or like, write more code than your actual application to test it. So with a protocol like this, you can build tools that will enable you to run awk-like queries or awk-like scripts for your distributed systems, where you can inject failures, simulate latency, and even rewrite destinations. Oh, so what happens if this goes to a failed-over system, which has a different behavior? This exists. So with Mux, we were able to implement this thing, and this was a hack week project. I think it got implemented in 2-3 days, and they select for the rest of the week. So more, do you want to read more about this thing? Mux is part of Finagle, and it is open source. It's been open source for more than a year. You can use it today. You can use Thrift Mux today. It is well documented in the source code, unfortunately, but read the source code. It is good Scala code. So related things to this one that we talked about, you may have questions about, are HTTP 2.0 and Google's Quick, which runs things, or UDP as well. But they are not strictly the same. HTTP 2 is a layer 7, layer 6, layer 5 protocol. Layer 6 is addressed by both HTTP 2 and TLS at the same time. Mux is more or less a session 5, layer 5 only session protocol, with the exception of destination names. We can say that it's a strictly session 5, layer 5 protocol. There must be questions. So this is either a good thing or a bad thing. When there's no questions, it's like I rocked, and like there are no questions, or nobody understood anything, that's horrible.
Yeah, I'll ask a question, Rick Farrow. Yeah, how complicated is it to configure Mux? I mean, you know, you make it sound like it can sing and dance and tap dance, and so I'm beginning to think of, my God, you know, setting this up must be insane.
So there are no Mux settings, none. You cannot configure anything. It is strictly handled by Finagle.
Ah, yeah. Oh, well, you just push the problem somewhere else.
Not necessarily, right? So given the fact that like Finagle is an open source that comes out of like Twitter's own stack, and like we know what our own stack looks like, and it might not be the best fit for like any other run-of-the-mill cloud virtualization, Docker in virtualization in virtualized cluster, or your choice. Mm-hmm. But the chances are quite high it has a sound model of latency and availability addressing. So as I said, you can only enable, disable leases, like do you want leases before making requests or not? And that's about it.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Okay. But what other configuration would you expect in Mux that is not already addressed by TCP configuration?
I was figuring you would have dials for setting timeouts for latencies, learning, you know, you said it was predictive about garbage collection. And so I thought also maybe services could send back hints and say, I'm sorry, busy.
That was a use case of Mux. So yes. Mux doesn't know anything about garbage collection. In that example, we just said that we can predict garbage collection and simply start not issuing leases and sending next. Those are simply APIs. As of today, like if you take the source code and want to rewrite your own GC avoidance algorithm, it is trivial. Like all the code is there. Like you can say that I'm not going to issue leases, just a flag, or simply send next.
Okay, great.
So like there's no configuration. It's quite similar. It's like what do you configure in TLS for the session part? Nothing.
Okay.
Other than CryptoSeed.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So where does failure detection health, you know, go within Mux? Does every intelligent like Mux proxy do that, or is it just learn through back pressure? How does that?
So most of our stack looks like everything talks Mux, or like, there are some exceptions at the very bottom of the stack, such as like Memcache or like some like in-house. I'm sorry, MySQL, some in-house database like which is old, like that didn't move to Mux, but everything remaining until to our front end, where we start speaking HTTP again, they all speak Mux. So the back pressure goes from generally from bottom of the stack to the top, or like somewhere from like bottom like from bottom to top, like down to up. So that's how we do that. There are two methods. We can either do it by next, or We can implement it with thrift messages. Why do we still need thrift messages? Because again, there are some apps, some portions of the stack that do not implement MUX. But eventually, we want to remove all these IDL editions and exclusively use the session layer because it is much more convenient. Does that answer the question? Perfect.
Hi, I'm curious to know, how do you go about instrumenting like your view of the world? Like, how many servers are currently accepting connections? How long services take out of rotation for GC, et cetera?
Right, so perfect question. Again, this is part of Finagle, but not only comes with Finagle. Everything else that does not use Finagle, I have to provide stats at Twitter. And like we do have a comprehensive collection. Everything goes to time series database. So we do compare these things from both sides, from both the client's side and from the server side. Of course, a server knows its own availability, but clients do not need to agree. We might have even network partitions. The server says that everything is cool, but client doesn't think the same. So we do correlate. We do correlate these stats. And we do have debugging tools that are that helps us to do this in real time instead of like multi-second accuracy. But all these real-time tools, they are used at staging or like when we are debugging stuff. So, but the answer, the overall answer to this question is everything, clients and servers, obsessively keep stats. Not logs, stats. And we do have stats for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey.
So in the question earlier about what happens when you connect to a node that's GCing, mm-hmm. I said, well, if you always get a lease, then the problem doesn't crop up because you have to, connecting is not enough. You first have to connect, then get a lease, and then you can start sending requests. Mm-hmm. And you said it's optional. Why is it optional? Why would you not like always just grab a lease? Like, it seems like it just improves the reliability of the system and gets your latency profile under control.
Right, but there are things which are, say, like are important. Like you want to get an ID from a system, and you can like simply retry this again later. So we did not implement these things. But like it is like, I don't know why it is optional. But like we had some use cases where like getting leases at all times didn't sound like a good idea. But yeah, I mean it's a round trip. Yeah, you cannot send data with that. So I don't know. That's a good question, though. I don't know the answer. Hey.
So another question. You talked about authentication. Are you also working on adding encryption there, or is that a plan?
Encryption is added on the presentation layer.
So that's going to be like if the application wants to encrypt, it needs to do it itself.
Yeah. This so it means that maybe we decoupled CIA, like confidentiality, integrity, and availability, the confidentiality portion of not the agency, it's like 10. No. And that will be in this NSA. So the confidentiality is decoupled from authentication and authorization. So like all these three, we do believe are like discrete concerns. So encryption is exclusively handled at presentation layer.
If I may have another question.
Yeah.
So when you're actually deciding where to send your traffic or what backend to connect to, that is also kind of out of scope of MUX, right? That's like kind of load balancing decisions, which MUX
right.
backends I want to
talk
to. Or?
We do exclusively make load balancing decisions with the load balancer algorithms available in Finagle that you choose. Like it can be a heap balancer, it can be like exponentially weighted moving average balance, anything that fits better to your application. But that load balancing decision, if you're talking to a router, or like if you're talking to a proxy, like that the proxy is MUX requests, that decision is made on that box, yes. But again, has to be either very loyal to your destination, or it should know what it's doing. Like it's there for some evil but helpful purpose to rewrite your destinations, or not necessarily, just like simply do exactly the same thing. All right, thank you. That was it there. This time I managed to get much, much better questions for, thank you for the audience, thanks.